Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've talked about it from time to time, these different efforts around the country to mandate voter ID, that voters present photo ID at the polls. And any chance the Justice Department has had to squash that in southern states due to the Voting Rights Act from the 1960s, they have done so. Some states, they do not have that ability to do that. Most states, they don't. And so some states will have voter ID. Now Florida, in addition to trying to push voter ID, is trying to actually make sure the people who are on the voter rolls are actually supposed to be voting. In other words, they're purging dead people from the rolls. And for some reason, the Justice Department has a huge problem with this as well, thinking there's some sort of nefarious plot afoot here by Governor Rick Scott and so forth. But here's Rick Scott on the Neil Cavuto Show on the Fox News Channel explaining what they discovered, why they're moving, and how the government's been a stick in the mud here.
We have found individuals that are registered to vote. They don't have a right to vote. They're non-citizens, and they voted. I have a job to do to defend the right of legitimate voters, citizens of our state. We've been asking for the Department of Homeland Security's database, SAVE, for months, and they haven't given it to us. So this afternoon, we'll be filing a lawsuit to the Florida Secretary of State's office. We'll be filing a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security to give us that database. We want to have fair, honest elections in our state. And so we've been put in a position that we have to sue the federal government to get this information.
Jim, that's just sad that the feds are that resistant to actually making sure the voting rolls are accurate. But kudos to Rick Scott and others in the Florida government for pushing forward with this and making it the big deal that it should be here and hopefully getting some good results from it.
When I was up in Providence, Rhode Island, John Fund, who literally wrote the book on voter fraud, and who's apparently coming out with an updated version of it, gave a really interesting talk and basically said, yes, it's as widespread as you think. It is as effort of the political machines as much as you would think. And he pointed out something that's pretty clear about the law that's almost common sense, but is worth repeating in these circumstances and worth kind of throwing in the face of Eric Holder every time he and DOJ have the audacity to try to stop the state from doing these things. At any time, the state can remove someone who is ineligible from the voter rolls. Meaning that if it's, you know, you're not sure, or, you know, if you want to call someone who hasn't voted in a few cycles and you think they may have moved away or something, that you have to do a certain amount of time before the election so that people have time to correct it. But if the person is ineligible, i.e. they are dead or they are not American citizens, in those circumstances, the state can remove the person from the voter rolls at any time. There is absolutely no deadline. There is no season to do this. You're not surprised to hear that the Department of Justice is making an argument that is wrong on the law, to say nothing of common sense, that, in other words, there shouldn't be a deadline. If you keel over today, the state should not have to wait until after November to remove you from the voter rolls. That's just kind of fairly basic common sense there. So good for Florida. I think this is a very winnable race. One of the things that was kind of fascinating of this discussion with Fund is that, look, when you think about James O'Keefe going in and showing that you can get Eric Holder's ballot, when you think about Democrats at their convention in Massachusetts requiring photo ID to get into the convention, with the fact that you have to show photo ID to get into the Department of Justice, all of these different ways in which you have to show photo ID, it's a fairly basic issue. And in most states, if you don't have a photo ID, they'll give you a provisional ballot. If for some reason you're in this small group of people that doesn't have a photo ID, I don't want you to not be able to vote. I just want to make sure you are who you say you are. And if it takes a certain amount of time to verify your identity, that's fine. So it's one of those things where the only reasonable explanation for the Department of Justice's arguments here is that they want to leave the door open for voter fraud. And that's not surprising. It's depressing, but it's good to see that Florida is not knuckling under.
On to martini number two now, Jim, and I know this will come as a shock to the president, but not as a shock to you and I. The economy's not doing so well. I know that's taking your breath away, but we've got three more pieces of stark evidence that that's the case, and it's just gotten worse since Obama's taken office. The one that's making most of the headlines today is the story from the Federal Reserve that the net worth of families plunged by just about 40% in 3 years between 2007 and 2010, down from $126,400 in 2007 to just $77,300 in 2010. Net worth, a lot of different factors with that. The plunge in housing value and so forth was a big factor there. Also, the president's dead wrong on the private sector doing fine. According to Investors Business Daily, private sector jobs still a net loss of 4.6 million from January of 2008. Turns out that the government jobs, though, are up 225,000 since January of 2008. It's an increase of 11.4%. And just to drive another nail through the heart of the public sector argument that the president and David Axelrod were making in the last few days, turns out states are spending more than they ever have. So the idea that they need a whole lot more help from the federal government to make ends meet doesn't really hold water. So three for three working against the president there. But more importantly, they show that our economy is a mess.
The headline of that report, Greg, in and of itself was not stunning. I think it's the degree. Basically, everyone kind of knows in their bones just how much ground the economy has lost since, say, 2007. But the numbers in there really are frightening. It's just the scale of the problem. And it kind of comes, also coming out this morning is Stan Greenberg, a Democratic pollster, has periodically comes out with polls and focus groups. And he did some in Ohio and Pennsylvania. And there's, you know, a lot of sadness out there. There is a lot of I could say, arguably psychological depression as well as economic depression. The working class in this country and the middle class in this country have really lost a ton of ground. They know they're not getting it back anytime soon. They kind of don't see any particular hope on the horizon. In these focus groups, they said the only expression of hope came from people who said, well, it's got to get better because it can't possibly get any worse. Greg, that is, you know, on the one hand, that's really not how you'd want the circumstances you want to run for president as a incumbent. It really, I don't think, this is where I think the private sector is doing fine, could really have dire consequences for the president. The country is in a deep, deep hole and really miserable state, both I think psychologically and in terms of morale, as well as to the state of our economy. And it's kind of been a free fall for about 4 years, or a free fall and then a couple of years of maybe bouncing along the bottom. Very depressing news out of this survey. And the detail there kind of indicates, no, it really is every bit as bad as we possibly thought.
Bad news all the way around. And while there may be a political silver lining, it's just really hard to watch and experience for many, many people. So, meanwhile, the president is still in the excuse game. We see it on the economy. We see it on a lot of different issues. And now we see it in his latest comments on the failed Wisconsin recall. Most people probably know the president will allow local reporters, especially from swing states, in to ask questions for 5 to 10 minutes. And then they play that on their local newscasts. And, of course, when local folks from Wisconsin come right about now, they're going to be asking about the recall. And here's the question the president got and his response.
There are a lot of Democrats in the state who have told me they're upset you did not come to the state and campaign for Tom Barrett.
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is that as president of the United States, I've got a lot of responsibilities. I was supportive of Tom and have been supportive of Tom. Obviously, I would love to have seen a different result.
And when it became clear Tom wasn't going to win, I just decided to ignore the whole thing, even though I had a handful of fundraisers in two different states that border Wisconsin. Jim, I'm not sure what he said there that's going to make Democrats in Wisconsin feel any better.
An astounding bit of excuse making there. One, it's kind of striking that Obama was not better prepared for that question, because when you invite a television reporter from Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're going to ask him about the Packers and the Bears? I mean, what? This really shouldn't be that surprising to him. So you'd like to think he'd have a better excuse lined up. And they said, oh, I was too busy. Well, yes, Mr. President, you were too busy campaigning. 13 fundraisers in the 14 days leading up to Barrett's loss to Walker. And just the last couple of days, you know, June 1st, I believe he had four different campaign events. June 1st, 4th, he did a conference call. Then he did a campaign event with Bill Clinton that day. Then June 5th, Election Day, he did another event with Bill Clinton. I mean, just an unbelievable amount of presidential campaign events. If you injected the president with two serum, he would say, look, Tom Barrett is going to lose, and I need to raise every bit of money that I can, and that's why I'm spending most of my money doing these days. However, that probably would have been very harmful. And so it's one of those circumstances where there really isn't any good excuse or any good answer that Obama can give there. What's kind of funny, you think about it looking in retrospect, is what was the vice president doing those days? Even if the president was, you know, it's not like, you know, we're bombing Libya again, or you know, there's some sort of foreign policy crisis or oil spilling out of the Gulf or something like that. This is a relatively slow news cycle and circumstances there. No crises going on. The president didn't send anybody. None of them, they sent the vice president. I asked this question on Twitter. Most people responded, Jim, If Vice President Biden had gone and done a stop for Tom Barrett, Walker probably would have won by about 15 points. So I guess that explains a little bit of that mentality that Biden can only do damage when he goes to do campaign stops for somebody.
That's probably true. So that's what the president should have said. I kept Joe Biden out of Wisconsin. I did the best thing I possibly could, and it still wasn't good enough. So once again, we see that the president's political attitude is all about himself, and hopefully he'll see some similar results to Tom Barrett come November. But we can only hope that for right now. But a lot of the factors certainly working against him right now. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.